Don't you deserve a Medicare plan you can count on? Well, you can count on a Medicare Advantage plan from UnitedHealthcare. Enjoy reliable coverage and low out-of-pocket costs with a Medicare Advantage plan from UnitedHealthcare. And if you have a chronic condition like diabetes, chronic heart failure, or a cardiovascular disorder, you may qualify for a UnitedHealthcare Complete Care plan with plans that fit your life today and as your needs change tomorrow. Find out more about UnitedHealthcare plans at uhc.com/Medicare.
Hello and welcome to IMP's WWE Adventures podcast on the Social Suplex Podcast Network. Help the network out by leaving us a 5-star review, give a donation directly through Ed Circle, and become one of the amazing community by joining the Social Suplex Discord. Link is in the description. Order merch from all our shows over at chopped-tees.com. Thank you to Dickie. Read the newsletter over on socialsuplex.com. Shout out to Trish and Tim as always. Listen to the other top-notch shows here on the Social Suplex Podcast Network. One Nation Radio, Keeping It Strong Style, All Things Elite, Wrestling Art with Chris Things, Trish and Sarah, Tunnel Talk, and Sam Brown's AEW Match Guide. My name is Matt Mayer, aka Imp, and this is your quick look back at the WWE week that was. 30 minutes, so I've got room to watch a 4-hour Dynamite. It's like I struggle to fit it as it is. Thanks for that, TK. These next 2 weeks, I'm gonna struggle. I'll see. I'll try and chip it away. Planning a D&D game as it stands to play next week as well, so not the best time to release a 4-hour Dynamite. But we have got 2 episodes of WWE TV to watch this week. An interesting week. We've had releases. What feels like the first actual negative sentiment towards the company from their hardcore fans, which feels like a while. Feels like the ratings weren't in a great place. Then they released R-Truth, and it's just a little bit of negative sentiment at the moment. Well, but we know what wrestling fans are like, especially the crowd WWE likes to create. Money in the Bank will happen, and I feel like that'll be enough excitement, it'll rejuvenate stuff. But as it stands right now, coming into the pay-per-view, it's like an all-time low for the Netflix era, which, yeah, this is only 6 months of existence, so it's not as big a statement as it sounds. Calm down. It's not like an all-time for the company, it's for the Netflix era, and we're only 6 months into it. But yeah, ratings are pretty low. The worldwide number for Raw coming out at like 2.7 million. Bloody hell. That's the worldwide number, never mind. Like that means the American one can't be that high. That's the worldwide one number. But as somebody who's watching these shows and talking about them every single week, what am I saying? I'm saying that like midway point for the shows for like 3 weeks in a row, they've just been so kind of like nothing with the crowd not really reacting. As if I'm watching that on Netflix, why would I get excited right now for WWE? It's fun. And this is a normal kind of lull period anyway. It's just interesting to see how Netflix reacts to that rather than how a TV audience reacts to that. And the Netflix audience as well, like, when I watched Monday Night Raw, I didn't watch it until today, so that's why I've not watched Dynamite yet. It's like, I didn't watch it until the Thursday. Like, I am not on those live numbers at all. I watched the edited version, and I enjoy my 1 hour 40 minutes. I do apologise for any live viewer who sits through the 3 hours. Like, don't watch it live, stop it. Anyway, I've also got a SmackDown to talk about, which for me was 2 hours, 3 minutes on Netflix on USA for you guys over there, from Knoxville, Tennessee. We've got the return of Cody Rhodes, so let's jump on over to that show. What did Cody and Jay have to say to John in the transphone? Cody making his first Smackers appearance since WrestleMania, given the time to soak in the chants and applause, apologising for getting worked up about the whole Cena thing instead of enjoying the return with the fans. Pivoting into the Jey Uso surprise, I just assumed they yeeted through the ad break chanting one more time when they were back, but using it perfectly to bring out Cena, who surprised with his own Money in the Bank partner. So out came a misinformation spreader to, I guess, kind of lean into that and tell confident falsehoods. I should be champion. You needed Cody votes to save you. I like the dynamic of Cena using the man for his own end and not really respecting him at all. That nearly showed its face when the transphobe stopped John from leaving, but instead we followed straight into the babyfaces beating them both up to send Knoxville home happy. And we've got Money in the Bank coming up. So these shows are coming in so fast. It's relatively insane. I was trying to figure out, when is this stuff? Like, how long have I actually got? And me just realising, like, oh god, no, like it's it's like this weekend, yeah. Because last week, obviously on Friday, I'm editing my Saturday Night's Main Event show. So for me, it was like, oh, it was only last week. It's like, no, it wasn't. Oh, crap, we're already at the next show. Like, 2 weeks is nothing. That is so little. They were building to Money in the Bank whilst we're going towards Saturday Night's Main Event, because Saturday Night's Main Event is a bit of a, like, small event anyway. But Triple H, it's a benefit of doing the 5-match cards. I mean, especially in the kind of run they're on at the moment, where they are building to a show. They're constantly building that story. And if you're not going to be on the pay-per-view, you're still having your story built. But I guess I'm talking about, like, the bigger angles at the moment. So we had the Money in the Bank qualifiers happening before Saturday Night's Main Event. We had the Punk and Volding things happening before they were going to be on the previous pay-per-view, so that we were hot for this one. And that has worked. The crowds are really hot for that stuff. So even though the amount of people tuning would say otherwise, yes, there's a lot of shows. I'm not as big a fan of that. But because there are only like 5 matches on the card, you're not burning through matches. It's not the previous era where you get the same match over and over. It's not that at all. We are getting relatively slow builds, and they get on a pay-per-view often when they deserve it, especially for their big angles. Other stuff, it feels like there's a lot of stuff not really receiving the attention. But I brought up the Money in the Bank qualifiers, so let's jump over to them. Naomi versus Jade Cargill versus Nia Jax. Hometown Bianca Belair opened the show. She did Tennessee things that I definitely understand and wasn't so completely culturally separated that I had no idea what was going on. Then got to her former friend's storyline. We had so many of those when Trips was the NXT guy. Good to see it on the main roster. Still the same habit. Which obviously called out Naomi, and oh, look at that. She's in her ring gear. And what a coincidence. Out came Jade Cargill, also in her ring gear, who happens to be one of the Money in the Bank qualifier opponents. And oh, Nia finally like, might as well, for our ad break lead up into the setup for the triple threat. One of the shorter Money in the Bank triple threats. The crowd only really reacted for the final few minutes. To be fair, it really did pick up with shit like Jax hitting a Samoan drop off Brett's rope and the pinfall into it by a Cargill splash. The finish came after Nia went for a two-person sit on them, but Naomi moved out the way, just let Jay get sat on and then rolled the lasso. And I'll be honest, in a Money in the Bank ladder match, I'm more excited about someone like Naomi. In that kind of match, she's the innovator coming up with the new shit. Jade Cargill isn't really the kind of person I want to see in that type of match. And Jacob Fatu versus Andrade versus Carmelo Hayes, the type of qualifying match where there's, you would assume, only one winner. You look at those three, it's like, well, Melo's in a storyline with The Miz where they've been getting beaten up by Aleister Black, and we're building up to Aleister Black kicking Carmelo Hayes in the face. Andrade's just not been on TV, and Jacob Fatu is US United States champion. He's got all this buzz going for him. And I turned this on and I was like, not every one of these matches needs the winner to be in question. I'm fine with that. Sometimes it's just grand to have a bit of fun, and I was fine with that. Andrade, he with little direction or TV time, wound right back into his Hayes feud for a tad here. Also, a grand two lads for Fatu to look the beast against. The flow was quick and entertaining, but the angle showed its head with Solo and Cobb coming out to ringside. The big man had the match won, but Sokoa was up on the apron asking for him to do it again, setting up Jimmy Uso making his second run-in of the night, and Andrade stealing the win from under the United States champion, giving us a complete shock as Jake Fatu, easily the biggest star in that match, easily the guy that the crowd will be most excited to see. And the next one down, well, Kamado Hayes is a young guy, might want to put him there as well, just like they did last year. But instead of going with Andrade, who just hasn't been on TV, just hasn't been featured, and giving him a spot here in the ladder match. He's another guy who is often entertaining and comes up with innovative stuff in these Money in the Bank ladder matches. So I'm not complaining that he's in the match. It's more of, oh, you're continuing to set up this Solo Jacob thing. So it feels like we're hurtling towards a Solo Jacob and quicker than I was expecting if he's already costing him at this level type of matches. I've just been used to the way that Judgment Day works, where things just get dragged out. And I was expecting for this just to be dragged out, even like past SummerSlam or whatever, or we get the big blow up moment at SummerSlam. But it feels like we're hurtling into a Jacob Fatu Sokoa match at a much earlier date than I had. Angry after the break, Jacob with flipping everything over until Solo caught up with him. For the last time, I do not need your help. Just setting us directly into something. But it's not really a SmackDown with a lot of note. Like, weirdly, I come out of Monday Night Raw. Sometimes I feel like I've not watched that great a show. But I kind of, like, I don't feel like down on WWE or anything. When I feel like a SmackDown, I sometimes feel like I haven't watched anything. Like, it's a very strange feeling. Like, obviously, like, entertainment fatigue-wise, I feel like I have watched a show. However, I don't really feel like there's much of note happening, and that seems to be a recurring thing with SmackDown. They're often very easy watchers, but they're not really that important to get through. Which might speak to the ratings we're seeing. Like, if you jump onto Netflix and you think, oh, I could watch this week's Raw, but nothing will likely that important happen, I'll just wait for the pay-per-view or whatever. Or you not even watch, I'll tune in when it's a bigger period, when you could watch these big dramas putting all the budget into. You know, it's interesting, like, it's obviously a different market watching the live TV every week out, almost out of habit, compared to it being live on Netflix. Like, the options to just quickly watch something else are, like, so immediately there. I guess that's the thing with the TV flicker thing, where I've never understood somebody who would flick through different channels of a TV station and be like, no, I don't really want to watch this, I'll just channel hop. But, like, I've never understood that. I watch a specific program. I turn on your channel because I know there's a specific thing I want to watch. If I don't want to watch that, I'm not turning on the TV. It's a very strange thing for me. It's not of my culture. But anyway, as I said, it's not really a SmackDown with a lot of big notes, so let's just jump on over to the other notes. I watched this on Tuesday, so it was wild seeing R-Truth used to get Cobb over and getting a good reaction to, only to be released over the weekend. So I watched this after Truth had been released and I'd seen the aftermath, and like Raw had happened as well. So already the news was out about the production quieting the chants for Truth, about anyone wearing shirts for Truth has changed as well. Like it's so wild to see them trying to quash a reaction to somebody that they built up the fan interest in the character. This isn't like an anti WWE sentiment from any of the fans. This is more of, you got us invested in this character over these past few weeks. Like literally, you just built him up for John Cena, so no wonder the fans were invested. And obviously he's like a very respected guy as well, it seemed, both backstage and from fans as well. So it really seems to be a wild decision that's very easily predictably had negative reactions, and you did it at a point when he was at the kind of like the peak popularity he's had for a while, because you just built him up for a John Cena match. I'd call it, first off, it's a wild decision, but to do it now is even more wild. Like, he not even spent any time just kind of quelling the heat he was on. Like, this is the most invested the fans have been in him in a long time. That's when you really, it's just wild to me. Like, it's all that corporate nonsense about trying to cut costs and record profits, once again rearing its head just like it's doing in every business, especially in America. But yeah, it's a wild decision to do it now, when even just waiting for a bit, so at least fan perception is a bit closer to, you're not really using him as much. It's like, oh, the writing's on the wall. There's a few people where the writing is on the wall for them. Like, you're worried for people like Bailey and that, who just aren't being used. But no, not only is he actively being used, he was in the John Cena title match, or whatever it was, that Saturday Night's main event. Got a great reaction. Came out of SmackDown here, got a great reaction, used to put Cobb over. And then he's just let go. Like, it's so strange. Wild. Cobb's Mateo music is generic guitars with an aggressive rap over the top. But at least there's no, like, JC at the start before his riff hits or anything. It's always time. It's always time for that to be added. Jimmy Uso ran out with a chair after to continue his storyline with Solo, trying to convince him back into the bloodline that started last week on SmackDown, which I didn't cover. Nick Aldis made a bunch of bad jokes as Chelsea Green committed to the bit of the nose injury, full sparkly mask and no TV makeup. Zelina Vega then got a vessel with Hour Fire. Tiffany Stratton had a quick backstage segment with two of the Smackers women qualified for Money in the Bank, Naomi and Alexa Bliss. Absent was Hour Julia. Don't worry, she approached Vega backstage instead. Hour WWE Tag Team Champions, the Street Profits, had a wee promo about all the different lads coming after them. So out came all the lads coming after them. Fraxium, Motor City Machine Guns, DIY with Candice in an 80s haircut, then finally the Wyatts, who returned last week. After the next match, we got a howdy 4-3 ratio interrupting play. Smackers special luchador Rey Fénix faced more Legado de Fantasma, teaming with NXT's Javon Evans. Is he ever bouncy? Is certainly a first commentary line. So I thought you wanted me to get invested in these guys. Yes, he is bouncy, but he's surely a better way to introduce someone. Ethan Page was also on commentary for what I assume were NXT reasons. I don't know, I don't watch it. Damian Priest got his victory lap following the Saturday Night's main event cage match. His exit after flowed into a quick Fatu stare upon the man's entrance for his Money in the Bank qualifier to maybe give us a United States Championship little nod. And that's a SmackDown. More qualifiers, little nods, little nudges, sending us into stuff that we already know is happening by the time we get into Money in the Bank. It just feels wild that it's this time. Almost feel like that we're getting storylines. You see it sometimes with TV shows. You're getting storylines that are maybe set to take place over multiple episodes or over a season or something, and instead they're like, oh crap, budget reasons or actor leaving reasons or but whatever. Suddenly, we've got to do it in one episode, and it just zooms by and you're like, oh this is happening. it's a bit much this is happening, and it's one of those where you can just sense that things are just being rushed forward at such a rate. What it normally results in is low investment, not really given the time to get interested and really get behind the characters. Instead we're just like hurtling through the notes to get to that next bit. Really, it's just a very easily predictable downside to running so many shows so close together. It's not going to get any better as well. We've got a short period coming up as well where we're making our next trip to Saudi Arabia. We've got our next pay-per-view show as well. And I don't know if that's like another 2 weeks type of thing. Then we've got SummerSlam coming up. Like, it's a weird time. It's a time of not great in super high investment. And they're running a lot of shows. It's a weird thing. I'm supposing that these decisions were made back when WWE was hot last year or towards the end last year or whatever. And now it's suddenly hitting where they're in a lull period and running a lot of shows. And the product doesn't really feel hot, especially when you're watching it. I feel like the talk about it I talked about it last week where it felt like maybe perception's shifting a little bit, but we won't really see the effects of anything properly until November or so. But But as it stands at the moment, I'm surprised. Maybe the R-Truth release has suddenly just accelerated that. And this week was the first time I actually felt it. It's like, oh, there is a bit of a negative. There's a proper negative sentiment here. And we want truth stuff happening during a segment with characters that they like in the main event. Oh, that's crazy. I mean, we'll get to that. Let's jump on over, because up next is Monday Night Raw, 1 hour 49 minutes edited version on Netflix for me. Hell of a week for WWE to be in Tulsa, Oklahoma, given the questions Linda McMahon completely failed to have any education on regarding the city's history. The skip intro button now jumps past the recap. Hey, not just title stuff. If there's a recap on the show, now I can skip like 4 minutes in. Like, oh, bloody hell, I'm already at 1 hour 45. 1 hour 44 minutes by the time Punk's music hit and that got underway. Speaking of those 2.7 million round numbers published by Netflix themselves, why not jump to the Punk rolling storyline that's currently being met with record low after a new record low stream numbers? So let's jump on over. I think with the rest of the WWE crowd, are relatively enjoying this storyline, but it feels like the one fire that's burning at the moment. The others are all either bubbling up or they're being held on the hob. It's just like, come on, I know. With EO versus Rhea Ripley, really the only match we have in our locker. Like, yes, we've got Liv Morgan. We're going to have to save her because literally we have only got Rhea Ripley. And EO's just not defending on. She's not defending the title since WrestleMania. She has been on TV, just not for like 2 weeks now. Anyway, let's jump on over to Monday Night Raw, CM Punk, Sami Zayn, and Seth Rollins.
AJ Styles now up to the apron now. Styles measuring his man. Styles looking for a phenomenal forearm and a headbutt by El Grande Americano. That headbutt took out Styles. El Grande Americano's gone a Money in the Bank.
Punk opened the show with basketball banter that I definitely understood. Oh, I just know so much about American culture. I'm so aware of it. Before getting to the jabber on Money in the Bank and addressing the two champions he's planning on cashing in on, hyping himself up to win his qualifying match and go after gold, right before Sami Zayn's music hit. This was where we got our first We Want Truth chance, breaking out as Sami Zayn was on the ring apron. But I am watching the edited version as well, so I suspect I heard less in the live stream, and I definitely know that we heard less than there was live in the arena, because they turned that shit down. They were quashing that immediately. Sami then also hyped the Chicago Man up to win his qualifying match, because he refuses to let Seth become world champion. Sami and Jey Uso faced the Killer Bees halfway through the show. Seth interference called out Punk and set our character table for the main event. My focus is elsewhere, so I've not noted down any B puns. I was just like, oh, this is a match that happens and we move on. Don't worry, they'll be coming. they'll stay buzzing about. We'll get something. The main event was a Money in the Bank qualifying match, CM Punk versus AJ Styles versus El Grande Americano. A fun little main event as Ring of Honor from 20 years ago clashed with modern day WWE bollocks. He's Chad Gable. No, he's not. Do you want any chance as we return from ad break? So at least you know this whole character is appealing to the right audience. Like, they're in on it, they're enjoying it. Right before production had to quiet another We Want Truth chant, at the point of the flow kicking into the next gear, the commentary as well didn't note it happening at all, and when the first one broke out, CM Punk did a pretty strong job of just immediately directing into a strong character beat and getting the fans invested in what was happening in the ring. Gable really was a carrier of the pace and momentum in this triple threat with the older lads, like how Punk rolling out the ankle lock sent Chad sprinting across the ring into a standing in wait AJ for a Styles clash. Kind of just felt like he was putting in all the effort for the ankle lock, then to get to AJ, just standing there waiting, just sprint across the ring and try to like elevate himself up into the Styles clash. Like, oh, he's putting in the effort. Putting it in. Or the bridging pin being broken up with a moonsault. Punk had the match won after a GTS to Grande, but with suspiciously stuck out leg, he was yanked out of the ring by Breaker. WWE main event means big interference and ringside kerfuffle time. AJ Styles jumped out onto all of the lads, but for his forearm back into the ring, he was instead met with a Grande headbutt, and production again had to turn the crowd down as they cheered instead of booed. They cheered. They were fully in on Chad Gable and they cheered when he won. Hey, look at these bad production habits still existing. I've never understood. I understand if you're hoping to get a boo reaction instead of get a cheer. It's like, oh crap, this is not what we wanted to present. My rule there is then change what you're doing backstage. Don't turn the crowd down because they're not doing the noise they want you to do. Turn them up, they're making a noise. You want an atmosphere over the correct atmosphere. Like, do it. It's like, short, 100%. Post-match brawl as Leather Jacket Seth beat the lads up with the help of his Killer Bees. It was a kerfuffle breakdown main event that we've seen so many times, trying to build up that heat in the exact same way we've seen so many times. And I remember we got to a point with the Mania build as well, where they started the direct build for that with the brawls all the time all over the place, and they had to change into the character pieces as we got closer to the event. But we're back into loads of more brawls. Basically, I just watch it and I'm like, I can see why people aren't tuning in. Like, it's not exhilarating stuff. Perfectly fine carrying stuff, and you are building the characters perfectly fine and okay, but it's not that exciting to watch, really. And maybe that worked a lot better on the previous generation of audience than it does on the Netflix one. Because all I can see really is the Netflix one aren't particularly tuning in. But we haven't got any data. We don't actually know what happens when we're out of a lull period and get close towards SummerSlam. What's the audience like? This is all new territory. The other Money in the Bank qualifying match was Liv Morgan versus Stephanie Fakir versus Ivy Nile. If anything, it's just interesting to see how much better Fakir is in the ring compared to her WWE star counterparts. Like, for me, Liv Morgan is still up there as one of the most improved. Ivy Nile impressed, keeping up more as well. But you can just tell Fakir is on another level. A snap and swiftness to her execution, able to go at such a quicker pace. You just know there'll be people backstage telling her to slow it down. Like, nah, bring a new feeling. Everyone going the same gets boring. Fakir has an excitement to the way that she wrestles. Surely encourage that. Surely. The product kind of needs something. Like, surely. The triple threat dynamics properly flowing towards the end. Taking care of one person leads you into being vulnerable to the third. Fakir got a video play package before her entrance. The crowd were easily reacting loudest for her and popped loud for her win. Morgan hit Oblivion on the eventual winner, only for Nile to break up the pin and drag Liv to the outside to meet the steps, which led into the American made last right into Fakir's knee. And I thought this was a very strong showcase for Fakir. And Money in the Bank, I feel like it's going to maybe play the same card as well, especially if the Raw viewing figure numbers are what they are. Then it makes sense to just have a live showcase on the pay-per-view. Because another thing as well is, in terms of like the viewing habits of stuff, are people turning up for the pay-per-views? And because it's like every month, they're turning up for the pay-per-views, but not necessarily the weekly shows. Again, we need more data. We need things to happen. I can't jump to these big conclusions. There's a reason that I just wasn't built for Twitter. I can't have big immediate opinions of good or bad, like in the instant. Like, no, I need more. I need to see how the data flows over the course of time. I mean, currently, it doesn't look good. It doesn't look good. But I want to see how the patterns emerge and things, because we know as wrestling fans that there's the ebbs and the flows, like, of the grand stuff overall, mostly of things influenced from like half a year ago, finally like having its effect on audiences and things. Just look at AEW, they hit their stride properly in November, but they're not getting the huge plaudits for the streak until like now. Perception takes time to shift. And speaking of perception, as I said, I was expecting that WWE might see a bit of a negative, maybe in October or November, but it feels like they have massively accelerated that with the release of R-Truth over the weekend. But he wasn't the only one let go. Carlito's contract is being let run out as well, and he wasn't in the Judgment Day backstage segment this week. And it almost feels like those two being let go. Carlito's was a contract that didn't get renewed, whilst R-Truth was. He was actively released, which just feels even stranger. And I wouldn't be surprised if there's certain names now a little bit worried. But the R-Truth one especially, there were so many chants for him across this show, and they were actively squashing it. Like, they didn't want these shows to be audible on the broadcast. But it's a self-inflicted wound. If you wanted to release him, you can just wait. And that's not how the stock market world works. If you want to, if you want a thing, you do it right there and then. And there's not much of like long-term foresight in that world. But yeah, just letting him go now, it just feels... If you're going to let him go, surely do the other WWE trick of just doing stuff to take away the fans' investment in him, then release him, compared to this where you've done it at his hottest point in years. Like, I was going to say, is this hotter than he was with the whole Judgment Day stuff? I want to say he became a bit beloved amongst the WWE fans during his old Judgment Day arc. So, but still, it's like he had the big WrestleMania moment, and then the next show he loses the title, and the next show he's released. Like, it would be mental. Like, that would be so wild. Like, why would you release him at peak fan investment? You're going to get backlash. You're going to get stuff on the TV like this. It's a self-inflicted wound. I have no sympathy for them. It's like, oh, we've got to, they're doing something that we're not that happy with. We've got to be on top of it. And it's annoying that they actively have to change shirts or turn the TV down turn the audio down from the crowd because they're chanting his name. It's like, well, it's a self-inflicted wound. You did this to yourself. You didn't need, if you wanted to do it, you didn't have to do it now. Like, just, that's me get my thing of, there's a politics I like strongly disagree with, but sometimes I get really annoyed at politics being done badly, even if it's politics I disagree with, and I'm just like, at least do it well. Like, I've done it doing football as well, where I've watched a team playing against my Nottingham Forest and I watched them do a bad build up, but I do a tuck kind of like out of instinct of seeing bad football, like, oh wait, no, you're the enemy, I mean, boo, yay, you mucked up. Just seeing bad, the bad thing, sometimes I just have that gut reaction. Finn and McDonut face the War Raiders with Kofi and Woods on commentary, giving us a successful Perez interference to present that maybe her addition to the group isn't the problem. Or at least not for Finn. They've addressed that in a chat with Finn, who just deflected into, "I think you're frustrated." Frustrated after losing. Setting the stage for Raquel to have a tepid match with Kairi, the crowd reading the room and chanting "We want Roxy" pretty early on, as another Liv-related loss was contrasted with Perez not being there after she successfully helped Bella win. I did say to get ready for another summer of Judgment Day drama, and we got plenty of it on this Monday Night Raw. And finally, Becky Lynch cut an edited promo to camera on Lyra, before the champion herself cut Jib live in the ring and called her fellow Irish lass out. After the great response for her the past couple of weeks, Tulsa full-on gave Valkyria the what treatment as she cut a promo in the segmented cadence, doing well by the end of her bit to just leave none of those gaps to give her room. The table set for Bex, reiterating the reasons for their match stipulations in LA. Lyra the one tapping into her anger to instigate the fight. Becky played villain and refused to give Tulsa that privilege, and off she trotted. "I'll see you in Los Angeles," trot trot trot. Off she goes. But yeah, my Monday Night Raw review pretty much echoes my SmackDown one. Yeah, we had our qualifying matches and we had our continued setup for the stuff where it's already been set up. Other than that, like, we're getting character notes which are going to be used later on. You can just see why the people aren't tuning in. Especially as this is now the fourth week in a row where it feels like there's the stuff that's hot is hot, but the majority of the show is nothing. And that vibe is just stuck for the last, it's now what, 3-4 weeks? Which, since I came back from COVID, after the post-WrestleMania kind of run to Backlash, like, the product wasn't like the super hottest, but you know, I wasn't like watching the shows being like, pfft. Now it's like 3-4 weeks in a row, I'm just like, I can see why they're not tuning in. Like, it's just, especially when, as a wrestling fan, if I had a choice, like, yeah, of course I watch AEW. They've got such high excitement at the moment. Yeah, I'm essentially contrasting that against their version of a WrestleMania season, kind of, as they're building towards their biggest show. But it's that perception thing where we were half a year ago with AEW putting on good stuff, but still they had that kind of tarring of they're not as hot as they used to be. Now that's all over WWE. And I thought it was going to take maybe half a year to really kick in, but it really does feel like the truth stuff has accelerated that so much that it's like right here now, which makes it not the worst time to have a Money in the Bank pay-per-view, because they aren't always like the most character investment heavy or the most storyline heavy shows, but they can often be exciting. I think that's kind of what WWE desperately needs more than anything, just an exciting show. Even if it's like your favourites don't win, or they have the negative thing for the fans of Seth Rollins winning, that means they're invested, that means they care, and they're watching Monday Night Raw and it's just not much. There's a lot of not caring or not super invested. So yeah, I'm not super positive WWE this week. I've seen them be better and it's been about a month now. came back from COVID, finally rejuvenated to jump back on the horse, and since then it's just been like, what are we doing here? Anyway, this has been one of my shortest recording because, well, what have I got to talk about? What happened? What happened? I'll have more next week, obviously, with the pay-per-view and with Monday Night Raw afterwards. I'm not really somebody who likes to do big predictions and anything, mostly because I fell off that horse during the Vince era, where my stance on it was, what, you're not basing it on anything in the ring, you're basing it purely on what do I think the Booker Man is going to do, rather than any of the stuff he's presented, because none of it mattered, so I just stopped doing predictions. So it's like, it didn't matter. And I never really picked it back up. I have a selection of, oh, maybe you could do this or that, but I'd never do like proper predictions. Other than that, I mean, I've got avenues I wouldn't mind them to explore. And yes, Seth Rollins feels like the most obvious winner, and they've had a load of qualifiers where they've almost purposely thrown in somebody who weren't expecting to qualify, which makes sense on Monday Night Raw with the interference of the Killer Bees and all that stuff. But they've also done it on Smackers as well. But even though it's predictable, I think it's way too, there's so many positives you can have with Seth. But then also you could have the consequences of what he did to get to the Money in the Bank match, and that we've been doing this past few weeks. You can have those consequences stop him from winning the match. But it's also partly because I do want to see him as world champion. One of the things Sammy said in his speech to CM Punk at the start of Raw was that this will be a Monday Night Raw that we will not like being a part of if Seth Rollins wins and becomes world champion. And you know what? Have him win. That's my main thing. It often gets that when you're watching like a film as well, which isn't that well written, and you kind of end up cheering for the villain just to make something interesting happen. I got that in Transformers 3. I was like, yeah, get them, Len Nimoy. You get them. You successfully carry out your plan, because I'm just aching for something interesting to happen. Just aching for it. And I feel I'm at that point with WWE. Seth Rollins is my robot Leonard Nimoy, and I just go and win. Send us into the dark timeline, because it's something. It's something. Anyway, I'll be back this time next week to talk about Money in the Bank and Monday Night Raw, unless I've forgotten how the schedules work. The shows are so quick together, and I've already said that I'm forgetting why we're actually at, because I'm at such a rapid fire. Yes, I'm signing off this show. I'm not even looking up. I'm going to go purely off of like a, trying to recall it and talking to a friend. Is that, is it this weekend? I can't remember. So anyway, I will bid you adieu. Thank you for listening, engaging, getting in touch in any form, any manner. Always appreciate it. Never take it for granted. I'll be back this time next week to talk about WWE, so you don't have to. With that, I bid you adieu. Adios.